I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now here's a highlight from Coast to Coast AM on iHeartRadio.
And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Astronaut Chris Hadfield has flown three space missions, built two space stations, performed two spacewalks, crewed the shuttle in Soyuz, and in 2013 became the commander of the International Space Station for 6 months. Formerly NASA's Director of Operations, Chris is a heavily decorated astronaut, engineer, pilot. He was named the top test pilot in both the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Navy, and was inducted into the Canada Aviation Hall of Fame. Chris is the co-creator and host of the BBC series Astronauts, Do You Have What It Takes?, as well as the co-host with actor Will Smith of the National Geographic's One Strange Rock. Additionally, he is an adjunct professor at the University of Waterloo, an advisor to SpaceX and Virgin Galactic, and chairperson of the board of the Open Lunar Foundation, born in Canada. Chris, welcome back to the program. Good to talk to you again.
George, it's a pleasure to be talking to you.
And how are you? How have you been?
Very good, luckily, through all of this tumult. I'm doing fine, thank you. How have you been?
Well, that's good. Everybody's good, and we keep moving ahead. But you're right, it is a strange time these days. It really is remarkable. But congratulations on your success and your efforts of what you've done for really this entire planet. It's quite remarkable.
That's a kind thing to say. Thanks. I've been busy, but I'm very happy with some of the impact that it's having and all of the stuff that I'm learning along the way.
When you were a little boy, I guess you wanted to become an astronaut, didn't you?
Even more than that, George, I hadn't really thought that it was a choice. I assumed it was sort of like a dream. It was suddenly hammered home to me that for Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and Mike Collins, the crew of Apollo 11, this wasn't just a dream for them. It was actually a choice that they made. They decided, you know, deliberately to turn themselves into astronauts. And that was kind of an interesting revelation for me. And so I tried to make the same choice in my own life, to not just dream about it, but to actually start making decisions in my own life that would help turn me into an astronaut. And, you know, as far-fetched as that sounds for a little kid, 9, 10 years old, that's what led to me doing all those things you mentioned in the intro and living in space and spacewalking and commanding a spaceship.
And were you Canada's first astronaut?
No, there were three that flew as payload specialists, sort of like guest scientists on the space shuttle prior to me, but just because of the timing of it, I was the first mission specialist, the first, you know, fully fledged space shuttle crew member. But then I served as a NASA astronaut for 21 years and flew in space 3 times. So there were lots of firsts in there just because it's a new business. First Canadian spacewalker, first to command a spaceship, things like that. But that's not because of any great personal talent. That's just lucky timing.
How did you occupy your time on the International Space Station? I think I'd get claustrophobic and go nuts.
it's a really interesting place to be. First off, you're running about 200 experiments. So there's a huge list of stuff to do every day. And the space station is really complicated and big, and stuff breaks all the time. So there's this long list of stuff that needs to be fixed every day. And then you have mission control in Houston that everybody knows about. But there's also a mission control in Montreal. There's one near Munich. There's one in Moscow. And there's one just outside of Tokyo. And they're all, to be kind, they're keeping you from being bored. They've all got a stick in the pot of building your agenda every day. So they schedule your time down to 5-minute increments for the whole 6 months that you're up there. So it's instead of being bored or claustrophobic, it's like this constant race just to try and keep up with all the stuff that Earth is asking you to do.
Did you have some kind of vision issue when you were on the ISS?
Sort of two parts to an answer to that. A lot of astronauts get a permanent vision degradation by flying in weightlessness for a long time. It's because there's no gravity to push the fluid out of your head, like on Earth.
Oh, my God.
And so for a lot of people, their intracranial pressure, sort of the pressure that's inside your head and pushing in your eyeballs, increases because of, with the lack of drainage from gravity. And so for a lot of astronauts, when that pressure in your head pushes on the back of your eyeball and your optic nerve, it actually changes your vision, maybe temporarily, or for some of the astronauts, permanently. It's one of the things we're learning on the space station. In that case, I was lucky in that it didn't mm-hmm. change my vision. But I did, for a short period, during my first spacewalk, there was contamination inside my spacesuit, and I was blinded.
Oh my
in my
God.
Left eye, and then both eyes by the combination of this contamination and the fact that without gravity, your tears don't fall and drain away. So the contamination doesn't get diluted by fresh tear, and then the contaminated tears running down your face. So it took quite a while for that contamination to clear and evaporate, and for me to be able to see again while I was outside on my first spacewalk.
Oh, my God. Did that scare you?
I think it would have if I hadn't practiced or prepared or imagined what was going to happen. It would have been a pretty scary thing if I was unqualified. But I'd spent decades getting ready. I was a qualified scuba diver and nitrox and hard hat diver. And then in the big swimming pool near the Johnson Space Center in Houston, where we train, I'd spent hundreds and hundreds of hours underwater inventing the spacewalks. And one of the things we practice, George, we actually have a name for it, incapacitated crew rescue. It's where you'll be training underwater, and on one of the back communications loops, the instructor will say, okay, Chris, we want you to simulate having a problem now. Don't tell the other spacewalker, and we're just going to see how they react. And so you'll go radio silent, and they have to come over and, help you back, or they'll tell you to act as if, something's wrong with your suit. You got a leak, or you're getting the bends or something, that pain that divers get. And so we practice for things like that. We didn't specifically practice for me going blind. But all of that training and preparation and visualization, it didn't really change the danger of what was happening, but it sure did decrease my necessity to be scared by it.
Well, with astronaut Chris Hadfield, he has written another new book. This is a novel called The Apollo Murderers. We'll get into that in just a moment. It's an ominous title, Chris. We'll get into that and find out how you named it that way. What do you think of the privatization of space? You in favor of the way it's happening?
Well, actually, I am fundamentally. It's sort of inevitable, and we're not privatizing the universe. We're privatizing the tiny little bit of space just above our atmosphere that our rockets are now good enough to get us to cheaply and safely. So it's inevitable that, it's sort of like if you asked me in 1904, when the Wright brothers had just flown in 1903, hey, what do you think of privatizing flying? And it's like, well, shoot, you know, we just barely be there. And it wasn't until the 1920s that airlines started forming, in the 1950s, that they became really, you know, viable and global. And so we're sort of going through that now in space flight, where our machines have gotten good enough that the cost comes way down. So now it becomes feasible for it to become not just government clients, but private clients. So it's inevitable. But I think it's important that we don't just let it be a complete free-for-all. Obviously, things like orbital debris and how you don't impinge on what someone else is doing. You know, you need to regulate it, just like we have air traffic control. We need space traffic control. But I'm for the idea because it's just a straight measure of progress.
Had you been in your 30s and 40s, Chris, and they asked you, let's go to Mars, you're going to be there for 4 years, would you have gone?
Absolutely.
Sure. Really?
I mean, yeah. I mean, what did you do between the age of 32 and 36 that was so important? You know, you wouldn't have wanted to go be one of the first humans on another planet. You know, 4 years may seem like a long time at the start of it, but there are several 4 year periods in my life I'd have a hard time picking out one significant thing that I did. And also, it's not just like suddenly you're walking down the sidewalk and the next day you're on your way to Mars. It's the 10 years of work in advance of inventing the space flight and helping to design and perfect the spaceships and trying to solve all those brand new problems. It pushes people right to the edge. Without a big challenge, it's hard to have good new ideas, you know? So yeah, all the great human adventures, I think exploration of the edges of what we know and understand, that's kind of the most fascinating part of it all. So yeah, I think that's where we're inevitably headed once our technology gets good enough, and I'm happy with the little pieces of it that I've helped contribute so far.
Listen to more Coast to Coast AM every weeknight at 1 a.m. Eastern, and go to coasttocoastam.com for more.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Scott Weinberger, journalist and former deputy sheriff. In my new podcast series, Cold-Blooded, I'm embedded in the cold case investigation into the death of firefighter Billy Halpern. Experience this investigation in a truly unique way, untangling secrets that may reveal the answers to not only one case, but almost a dozen. Listen to Cold-Blooded, the Apollo Gym Murders on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.